Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Junaid Gwari, the co-founder of Pareto. Good afternoon, Junaid. How you doing?
Doing very well. How are you?
Good. And I got your name right?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
Well, good. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Yeah, absolutely. I am a computational mathematician by training. I started off my career as a public sector climate scientist, worked for NASA for a short time, transitioned to the public or the private sector as a data scientist, eventually got into tech leadership as a CTO at a analytics and data mining firm called Mark Labs. And since then, I've been managing a crypto asset hedge fund called Pareto Technologies, which I launched after my time at Mark Labs.
Wow, that's a lot for such a young man as yourself. So, well, now that we're talking about Pareto, tell us what Pareto does. You know, it's probably a little more complicated than just a Bitcoin digital, you know, digital asset company. Who's your typical customer and all that stuff?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Just to provide you some context, I mean, I've been involved in some capacity, myself and my partner. We've been involved with crypto since essentially, the inception of it. However, it was actually at our time, at Mark Labs, where we had a client that essentially had come down the pipeline, and it was an institutional asset manager, and they were expressing interest in allocating to crypto. And at the time, I knew about Bitcoin in the same way that most retail investors do. That we heard about Bitcoin as a hedge against inflation and so on and so forth. But what I was, kind of confused by was why, a large firm was trying to allocate in the dozens of million dollars to this asset class. So ended up doing a deep dive into the crypto and went down the proverbial Bitcoin / crypto rabbit hole, and just found that the space was riddled with inefficiencies, and at some point realized that there's a lot of opportunity in the space, and that it was early on, it was a good time to enter. So one of our lead software engineers at Mark, he and I, we decided to launch Pareto. And basically what we started off as was as a arbitrage strategy, essentially arbitrage / market making. So essentially we were rectifying pricing inefficiencies across trading venues and exchanges with a software we developed that would sell and buy at opposing exchanges to close that gap, the what's known as like the spread, essentially, across the board. Since then we've gotten into a whole number of other things. We have like a whole machine learning based portfolio which uses something called Bayesian search optimization, and it's something that the U.S. Navy used in the past for finding like lost vessels. We found that it works really well for extracting entry exit signals from the market, so we implemented that. We've started to do quite a bit of discretionary trading. I've developed a number of software tools that are completely proprietary. I've onboarded a portfolio manager and other team members as well. So we've been growing.
Very cool. I have to be honest with you. I actually have heard of Bayesian search. My daughter has a master's in theoretical computer science, so she tried to explain it to me once. I didn't understand it at the time, but I have since forgot.
No, that's great. No, I don't want to digress too much here, but I think Bayesian search and these types of meta heuristics and heuristic strategies, I think like that's where things are headed when we think about AI and machine learning. These types of optimization techniques, I believe, are going to fundamentally impact just about every industry. So that's great that she's familiar with that.
I would agree with that. I'll have to tell her all about your product, and I have to talk to her this week anyway. So what has been your experience with remote employment? When you started Pareto, were you like a 9-to-5 with an office, or did you start as a remote company?
We did actually start as a remote company. When we were at my partner and I, when we were at Mark Labs, there we had an office. But when we just decided to launch our own firm, we started remote entirely. I mean, we were already familiar with a number of the productivity tools that have become a bit more mainstream now that weren't at that time. And so, the Slacks and Asanas and the Jiras of the world, we had quite a few workflows down and, cadences set as to how to meet, when to meet, what to talk about, and so on and so forth. We had been doing a remote for the most part. And So yeah, I think we were prepped for COVID before knowing that it was going to come around.
And is it more, is it still just the two of you, or do you have more employees now?
We do, yeah. We're still a small team, six total now. But yeah, we're six in total. That's the good thing with alternative asset management, I think, is that on a, you know, generally speaking, you can run a fairly lean operation, especially if you're a quantitative fund like us, and grow your assets under management quite a bit in the process. So.
And you don't have to have an office, right? I mean, and are all of them in the basic DC area, or are they all around the country?
Well, actually, we are a little bit scattered. So we've got someone in New Jersey, my partner's in DC, well, in Northern Virginia. I'm in upstate New York most days, or Western New York, I guess, is the official location. And then we have a teammate in San Francisco, actually, in your neck of the woods, and then one in Miami. And I think that's everyone. Oh, and sorry, one more in Chicago. So, yeah.
Wow. So we're pretty much, you know, you're sort of the whole country, right? I think you need someone down in like Dallas or that area just to get.
I know, yeah. Like we gotta go for a little bit further south in the Western region.
Yeah. So, what do you think is the future of remote employment, and what do you think can be done differently to make it more effective?
Absolutely. I think you know, honestly, I've been a huge proponent of remote employment since before all this happened. Largely because, I mean, from as an employer, what I've always found is that, you know, you're able to source talent in a much more strategic way if you hire remotely, because you're not, if you think about, you know, if you look at it mathematically, you're not subject to your local population, mm-hmm. right? Your the sample set is much larger. And so now all fields can't do this, obviously, but I think in our world, you know, computer science, mathematics, mm-hmm. Data science, and so on and so forth, engineering in most cases it does allow for this. So point is that I think that, you know, at the time I thought I was mostly alone in thinking this, but now I've been hearing this quite a bit, is that I believe that, you know, the larger firms as well, along with startups and smaller companies, they are going to be tending towards this direction, because there are certain geographies that you know, that train different types of folks for different things. Just to give you an example, I know that like Toronto had a huge hub of like machine learning and AI specialists. Mm-hmm. I think IU Toronto has some pretty solid programs around that. So actually, a lot of the Silicon Valley based Googles and so on and so forth, Palantirs and such, they started to hire out of Toronto. And the reason that they did that was because A, cost of living is lower there, and B, the talent is much more aligned with what they were looking for during those cycles of hiring. So I just think that's going to be the case across the board. I think the next wave you're going to see here is coming probably out of Wall Street and whatnot, where you're going to see a lot of these traditional asset managers and banks trying to recruit all over the world for positions that they wouldn't have in the past.
You can already see it. Fintech is starting to just change dramatically. And I actually think the companies that don't change are going to be left behind. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have I have friends that work for like very, you know, the classic either government or like large corporations. A friend of mine, she works for Barclays, and she was mentioning that, I mean, some of the things that she was taking me through, that they basically input, you know, they interface with Excel in ways that are completely outdated and they really shouldn't be. And frankly, there's certain jobs that are just, it's just a lot of it could be automated, right? So you could be training them to do something else. And, there's no impetus to change at large organizations. You have, you know, plenty of runway, you know, you're well established. But I think what's interesting about recent events is that, you know, the pandemic has really forced large corporations to have to innovate in the same way that I think, you know, startups and small companies just have to survive. So I think it's, that change is definitely, it's going to continue.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've been to Toronto many times and large, very large population. So there's a lot of people to draw from there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there are some very good universities in the area. So I know that.
Yeah. And that's just the machine learning use case. But that, again, like there's other, you know, there's certain populations that are, you know, putting out certain kind of talent and others that need that kind of talent. So I think that's going to definitely be changing. So,
yeah. So about 10 months ago, everyone was forced to go remote. You already were remote. Right, 100%, it sounded like. So So did that have any challenges or roadblocks that you didn't expect, or was it pretty much business as usual for you?
Honestly, yeah, it was pretty much business as usual. I will say, in terms of, I guess you could say, like talent acquisition and stuff, I think in that realm, it was a little bit better because, you know, while it wasn't totally a new concept, it was still not a widely accepted concept, like largely being work from home. And so, you know, what's interesting in our experience on the recruitment and the hiring side is that, you know, there's a much larger population that was interested in that, whereas that wouldn't have been the case, you know, a month before the pandemic. So,
yeah. And are the majority of your customers individuals or are they institutions?
Yeah. So at the current time, they're mostly high net worth individuals. But you know, we do have some pretty close relationships with like family offices and a number of funds that we intend on raising with. You know, once we're at a certain assets under management, and then also once our infrastructure is at a certain point as well. So,
interesting. And I would assume that since you're mostly individuals or smaller firms, that you know they actually had more time. I think more people are trying to look at digital currencies as an alternative once the pandemic hit, because they actually had more time in their hands to research. Correct?
Yeah. Well, it was a number of things. It was so the short answer is yes. I mean, like they definitely. Interestingly enough, we were able to raise from actually a whole number of investors who initially, you know, just really didn't get the why behind crypto, right? I spoke with a number of folks whose money we're now managing, who at the time, you know, I was explaining to them how, you know, I had some systemic qualms with the fractional reserve banking system, and how I think that it was great when it came into existence, but I think it's a bit dated, and there's a better system now, and I believe it's blockchain based assets, crypto assets. And so but you know, it's a very hard sell. It sounds like you're talking about you know, unicorns and dragons to them at the time. And so now you know, push comes to shove, and you know, our thesis has always been that the system as it currently stands, it is to a degree headed towards a guardrail. It cannot absorb large shocks, and then a large shock came into existence, that being the pandemic. And you know, we are having to print money, which is fine because people need the stimulus checks. But the issue is that the current process by which, you know, this process known as quantitative easing takes place, it's just the Fed's going to assume this on its balance sheet. So eventually, we have to pay it off anyway. So right. It's just, you know, it doesn't work holistically. So. So yeah, I mean, you know, you have like the MicroStrategies and the Mass Mutuals of the world who are now buying into this. So, and that's why, because it's simply a hedge against fiat sovereign based assets. So, but yeah, so there, so that potential reality from late 2019 is now the you know, reality we're living in. So,
yeah, no, and as you know, the fiat, most of the fiat currencies printed money over the last year.
Yeah, they because like that's the issue is that, you know, you only have three primary tools. You know, with any central bank has three primary tools, right? It's a interest rate modulation, taxation. So essentially, you know, wealth redistribution, and then the last one is quantitative easing and money printing. And so none of these tools at this stage are working. And I think that the underbelly of the system that I think most Americans are really just, you know, most people internationally, given that, you know, fractional reserve banking is the de facto way of banking. I think it's become a little more apparent to a larger number of folks that it may not be the best, valuation / value exchange system out there. So.
Yeah, I agree. And as you know, the U.S. government is doing all three of those things you just mentioned.
Yeah. And that's the thing is it's only getting us so far. So that's kind of the real issue. I think one thing I would add is that, you know, Bitcoin and crypto, a lot of times people see folks in the space and it's like, oh, well, maybe you're an evangelist of this stuff and whatnot. But really, I look at it objectively. The way I see it is that you know, my interest initially, anyway, wasn't necessarily with crypto or Bitcoin. It was that it was a number of things. It was the mathematical flaws with the fractional reserve system, but it was also the fact that the optionality aspect of it. You know, you might have an Android, I might have an iPhone, or vice versa. We have options with everything out there, but somehow we've grown to just accept that how we store and exchange value is just it's done through fiat assets that are issued by a sovereign. I don't know why this is a necessary thing. And so I think what Bitcoin has shown is that it doesn't have to be a necessary thing. There are smart ways of, you know, allowing individuals to retain their value, maintain value without needing a sovereign to be involved in that in any way. And, you know, like this may not never get like mass adoption, but what this optionality or this hedge does provide is enough of a push to large governments to get their act straight with their monetary and fiscal policy development. So I'm hoping that that's what continues to happen, but we'll see. So.
I agree with you. And Junaid, I could talk to you about this stuff for hours. You are obviously very well versed in it. That's a whole different podcast. So I want to thank you for your time today. It's been great talking to you. And I hope for a successful 2021 for Pareto.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for taking out the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.